Okay, ready?
Everybody
settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker. Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man.
You rub the clothes on the skin, it doesn't even have
any control. Most of the night. Most of the night.
Wow!
There are
several
fools. Short round. Somebody. Very nice. Be right
back.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Elva, withdraw. I know you're out here. Just come in before the monkeys spot you.
There's no going back. This is between us, the wizard and I.
The Wicked Witch can't elude us forever. Not with Prince Fiero and his squadron hot on her trail.
Wizard of Oz.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Critique Revolve. I am your host today, Thomas Cowley, and joined with me is Michael Flores.
Hello.
And we are doing the review of the long anticipated, but not that long because it's only been a year, part two to the Wicked movie, Wicked for Good. And this one, it was honestly, I think, looked forward to by us, which most people may not believe with our general demeanor and personality, but we both watched the first one as we part of our Oscar debates and discussions, and pretty much everybody, you, myself, David, were on the same page that the first installment was a good movie. Now, that one got nominated for a bunch of different stuff. It was talked about quite a lot. There was some controversy for completely silly off, red carpet interview, social media stuff, which basically just describes any movie in the last 10 years or since Twitter came out. But this one here was the adaptation of the second act of the world famous musical, which is adapted from the book from, 1995. Now, I didn't know there was a book that much different than the play. I always thought the play was just essentially the book. Turns out it's wildly different. It's loosely adapted off of the book. There's a lot of things that are still there.
You talk about the stage play?
The stage play.
Is loosely adapted
from the book. There's a lot of differences. This movie, part two, is intended to adapt the second act of the stage play. And the first one was the first act of the stage play. So essentially, you could watch these back to back, give yourself an intermission, and you've recreated the Broadway experience to some degree. At least that's the idea. And as we've gone into this one, we have the same director, John M. Chu. We have the same screenplay. Winnie Holzman and Dana Fox worked on this one, same as the previous movie. We have the same cast. Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande, Jonathan Bailey, Ethan Slater, and many, many more. I always get her name wrong. Michelle Yeoh and Jeff Goldblum as the Wizard are all returned for this one. And going into it, I was thinking, okay, this will be more musicals, which have never really been my thing. But what I praised about the first one, though I think we all did, was that the musicals were not interruptions to the story. They were necessary to the plot advancement and told us things about characters or the world or what was happening moving forward for the overall plot of the movie. And that helped a lot. That was something I've liked in the very few musicals that I have enjoyed over the years. And the production design was great. The acting was great. We're looking at a solid follow-up. The bases are loaded. You shouldn't be able to miss. Even a bunt should get you a home run. This is what we call foreshadowing for those listeners who have been here long enough.
Unfortunately, you know, whoever was up to bat hit a pop fly.
You know,
which is easily
it was just an easy out, and all that effort that had been in the first part of the game.
You know? It seems like this is our life of late, just disappointment. Yes, we were in fact looking forward to seeing this. In fact, we missed the first film, Wicked, last year during the screening for press because we just didn't really have a lot of interest. We ended up watching it
separately, yeah,
because we do Oscar coverage. And when we watched it, we're like, why didn't we watch this before? This is actually a really well done movie. It doesn't matter if it's not our typical wheelhouse. You know,
right. A good movie is well made.
Yes, a good movie is a good movie. So going into this, our expectations were high. So we can use that as maybe our bad. We might have expected too much.
And like all Icarus flights, it too must come down. And unfortunately, I think that's kind of the general consensus of the sequel, Wicked for Good. We'll get into exactly why here. But overall, it's unfortunate that this was broken up. What seems like the accurate way to break this up into two different parts seems to have been adhered to, but there was something that was lost in the making, I believe. And unlike other movie franchises that have done the part one, part two, which I will never think is a good idea, but some have pulled it off more successfully than others. But my problem is essentially, if you can do an adaptation of The Lord of the Rings, one book per movie, even if that movie's 3 hours long, there is no reason you cannot do a single movie installment for anything else, or damn near anything else. Now, will some be better at that than others? Absolutely. Can it be done either way? Yes. Some work, some do benefit from having that extended runtime. Something like Dune in recent memory, a strong part one, a strong part two. But at the same time, had that been one movie experience, I think everyone would have been happier for it, except people who like can't hold their urine and have to go to the bathroom. You know, but that's where the intermission came from. We used to have these kind of epic movies, these 4 hour grand pieces like Ben-Hur, Cleopatra, The Ten Commandments, things like that. Honestly, I'd rather see that again than this. Let's take a movie, break it in half, where one doesn't really have a satisfying ending and the other doesn't have a satisfying beginning, but only together does it kind of work.
I think your analysis is correct and your assumption is correct, but you can do whatever you want when you make a movie.
You can.
You just have to make a movie. You can't make a half a movie, a kind of movie, because you're trying to adapt it according to the source material. Movies are one medium.
Yes.
Stage plays are another medium. Television is another medium.
Video games is another medium.
Books are another medium. Mm-hmm. So you have to adapt things according.
Well, and the difference is a book, taking a book or something longer and adapting it into a movie in a well-made single instance is like whittling. You cut off the parts that you don't need and you find the shape of what you're trying to make within it. The part one and two mentality to me is, let's take this thing and break this stick in half. And yeah, you can put them together and it's together, but it doesn't really fit and it's loose and it doesn't make one single piece. All you did was break something.
I get what you're saying, Thomas, but I don't know if I'd even necessarily say that's what they did. Yes, on paper, that's what they did. But if you look at Wicked, the one that came out last year, that was a complete movie.
The cliffhanger
ending. The story wasn't complete, but it was a complete film.
Yes, I will give you
that. It had the complete act structure from beginning to end. There was everything that needs to be there in order for it to be viewed as an actual film. The second movie abandons all of that. It's not a movie. It's a sequence of disconnected
events. Yeah.
It's not a series of coherent events. That would be a plot. This doesn't really have a plot. There are just moments where there's emotion, a song, a few things that drive home a few additional points to the original movie, and then there's an ending. There really isn't conflict. So the film abandons its coherent narrative logic, progression, conflict, stakes, and resolution. So whereas the first film actively constructed a world of emotional and thematic dilemmas, this second installment, Wicked for Good, seems to just rest on his laurels and is content on resting on his laurels.
Well, and that's what a lot of bad part twos, I think, have done. Unfortunately, it's like, you saw the first one. Why else would you be here? And they just kind of leave it at that.
Events. This is my biggest problem. Just to continue the thought, events occur not because they develop organically, but because it simply feels like, okay, now's the time for them to happen. So you have entire swaths of story which are skipped so the film can jump to the next musical number. Yet these songs don't even propel the plot. They actually just force the audience to marinate in unearned emotion. So the movie abandons what makes a movie a movie. There isn't an actual act structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, and I'm bringing this up early on in the review, because there will be Wicked fans who say, well, the reason why is because this is act two. That's why it feels like an incomplete movie. And what I have to say to that is this. So saying it's act two doesn't negate the fact that this is also a standalone film, a standalone feature film with its own narrative obligations.
That's saying, well, it's a part two. It's not a standalone movie, but it is a standalone movie.
Yes,
it is. There's a difference between being in the theater, having an intermission and coming back, or being at your house, pausing the movie, making yourself some popcorn and coming back, rather than showing up and someone has started an entirely different movie and you're like, what just happened? Where are we? Who's this character? Now, yeah, you know some of that stuff, but like Mike said, it doesn't have any of the beginning setups for what's happening. But at the same time, something about this script is dramatically missing, and I haven't seen the play, so I can't speak to that to the same degree.
Well, one of our listeners reached out when I posted our review, my written review, and they said that your complaint is actually common with the musical itself. So then I reflected on that because I have not seen the stage play either. But if you have the opportunity to adapt the source material, this is where you can take those imperfections
and
if
work
it's
on
known
it.
That people complain about things in the stage play, then you would think that the director would say, well, okay, I'm going to get rid of those complaints. I'm going to remedy those issues and make my part two, the theatrical version, a better version.
Well, and that's the thing that we've seen in strong adaptations. And I'll go back to the Lord of the Rings example. And I am a fan.
One of the best adaptations of all time.
Admitted, one of the best adaptations of all time, widely regarded in that respect. And in separate interviews and discussions, Peter Jackson talked about how they cut out the Tom Bombadil character and his whole sequence of events from the first book, The Fellowship, because while it is in the book, it doesn't really serve the plot, he said, of the adventure of Frodo taking the ring to Mordor. It did not serve what we were doing. As a book, it was this side shoot adventure and it had some relevance to it. And it's very much a world building thing. And he's a beloved character in some respects, but it was this vestigial element that did not fit nicely into the movie adaptation they were making. And this feels like they were just trying to keep it, warts and all, no pun intended with the witch element, but warts and all, and not improve upon it. It's a shame because both movies are incredibly long, and it feels like had you been able to cut down the runtime maybe of the first movie and staple on the additional maybe honest to God 30 minutes of content into this one, you would have made a one awesome fucking movie.
Yes, the actual story that was there could have been tacked on to the first movie. There was not enough actual story to justify 2+ hours of film. You have to make these movies, each of them, they have to function
on their own
as a coherent, singular cinematic work.
Yes.
Not just merely a continuation.
And that's the thing. That's what I think one of the best things about Lord of the Rings is each movie fits next to each other, but the movie and the plot and the elements that they're trying to overcome within each movie work just the same way the books were designed. The first chapter of Two Towers is stapled into the movie, The Fellowship of the Ring. It ends a little bit differently. It's the first chapter of the second book. They moved parts around that fit to make a stronger movie. And that's one thing that I think we have a problem with in today is we have a mix where Hollywood has had a lot of problems trying to adapt stuff correctly. Comic books were the biggest villain in that element. Rather than give us the actual X-Men we want, here's a bunch of people in black spandex and leather, and it's totally different with some of the powers and characters, but fuck it, it's close enough. Elektra, Daredevil, all those early comic book movies. It wasn't until 2008 and on that they actually had accurate to the comic book characters, costumes, events, and stuff like that. But as time has gone on, Hollywood has gotten back into bad habits in some respects, so fans clutch all the harder to what they love. But we've lost the skill set of how to adapt something from a different, as you said, media or medium into a movie that works for a movie. And I think the script is perhaps the biggest element of this that doesn't work. And we'll kind of go into that.
Okay, really quick then. I want to get your response to this. This is a question for you. And this question is designed so that we can have a fair discussion and be fair to John Chu, the director. Because you're bringing up the necessity of doing proper, proper adaptations. And we're living in a time where a lot of fans get very disgruntled that things are not being adapted appropriately. Mm-hmm. So do you think the director, John Chu, figured, well, okay, there are obvious issues here with part two. However, this is a slippery slope. Do I rewrite and adjust and make it a better movie and run the risk of pissing fans off for changing things? Or do I do a true adaptation, warts and all, of part two stage play?
And that is honestly, I think, a person-to-person decision, truthfully. That's one where maybe on paper I would say you could go either way.
Because if someone asked us to adapt a movie, let's say Wicked.
Yeah.
I would have this conversation with you.
And I know where I stand on that.
Should we do this? How do you stand? What decision would you make?
My opinion, you make the best fucking movie that is true to the soul and source material as humanly possible. You cut what can't or doesn't work, but you don't cut unnecessarily because you feel like it, or, well, I didn't care about this character, so I'm going to cut that whole scene. No. What we get when you do that is the Dark Tower movie, where it's like, I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. I'm just going to adapt it and say it's the Dark Tower. And it's a horrific experience. And then you have people who are like, we're going to make the best movie true to Tolkien's vision as we can, even if we have to cut stuff. And that's what you get with Lord of the Rings. And then you have Wicked, where it's, we're going to stick exactly to what was, even if it didn't work. And I feel like that is actively stepping on a landmine that you don't have to, just because you're afraid some fans won't like it. But here's the thing. If you make it awesome and to the best of your abilities, they will like it. People love the books and the movie Lord of the Rings. People can love the stage play and the book and the movie Wicked. But I think you did yourself a disservice having two movies that are essentially lesser in different ways than one solid fucking great movie that could have been.
Yeah, because there were moments when we were watching. In fact, I think I leaned over and said, did a different director do this?
You did. You did say
because
that.
It just felt like a completely different creative team.
And
the only similarity was the actors
production
themselves.
Production design and the actors.
Yeah. It just felt totally different.
And that's part of the problem is that if there's things that they were clearly not working because a lot of people have complained about it or said, that, oh, that's a weakness in the stage play. You have an opportunity to make a better version while remaining true to the source material, because they did not change much. From my understanding and what research I've done, it did not change much. But at the same time, as a movie, it does not work on its own. Again, it's different when you're pausing halfway in between a single event and watching two separate standalone pieces that are meant to make some greater piece.
And just to add on to this, everything we're talking about right now, we're not even getting into nuance. This is just a broad
overall.
A broad overall thought on the movie itself. Because when you start digging in deeper, if you look for these things, you get more mad because you realize that nothing works in this movie. Even character motivation. There is no real motivation. People who had, which makes this worse. So if people want to say, well, this is act two. Well, okay. Well, if this is supposed to be a direct continuation, then why are people's agendas
wildly different?
Completely different. People just decide not to do things that they were all about in the first movie. Well, never mind. Your entire story was about this and you just gave up for why?
This is my uneducated opinion. Act one is very much and the first movie is very much, here's an alternative take on the world of The Wizard of Oz and the history that you've been told. And it doesn't have to really adhere to anything because it's early enough in which it can tell its own story. Act two, in both the play and the movie, is hampered by the need to tie in the Dorothy, Scarecrow, Tin Man narrative we know of the house from Kansas falling into Munchkin Land. And as a result, there's things that don't fit because all it says in the Act Two summary is sometime later, Elphaba has been known as the Wicked Witch of the West. In the movie, it's the very first line that said, it's like something like 12 seasons or 12 something or other, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean as a frame of time, because no one looks any different. But there's this idea of like, we have to adhere to the elements that we know of this character because unfortunately this character dies in The Wizard of Oz. So how do we have an end to this character's story? The first one's unbeholden to that element. The second one is trying to shoehorn elements in. For example, both in the play and the movie, mild spoilers, Elphaba returns to Emerald City to free the wizard's monkeys. Why? Now, from a plot of the play perspective, it's because we need to have the wizard's monkeys be her monkeys. From a movie narrative point, you should have a reason the character has thrown themselves into danger to walk into the heart of the fucking enemy fortress. And instead, it's because that needs to happen.
So this is the reason why when I said things just occur,
yes,
not because they organically happen, but because it's time for it to happen. That is part of the problem that, yes, added to that, because you needed to insert the Wizard of Oz elements into the movie. And this is where the director, along with his writer, could have fixed the Wicked for Good elements,
yes,
to better and seamlessly lead to those Wizard of Oz elements that need to happen. Because you're right, they, yep, happen simply because the Wizard of Oz elements must happen.
And that's the thing, is a little change like that. And this is, people are going to be like, you fucking arrogant ass. I'm just going to go for it. Hear me out. In the first movie and in Act One, Elphaba is tricked into giving the monkeys wings, which are painful. It's a painful experience for them.
Such a good moment too.
In the movie and the book in Act One, that is a good thing because you're like, oh shit, that explains why these monkeys have wings. It makes her betrayal by the wizard work and why she's mad at him. It makes her look like a bad guy to some degree because of what she's done, or she has this guilt and shame, and that's one of the reasons she flees.
Another issue to tack on is, and this is one of my biggest problems, I could forgive a shoddy script because they're trying to do a pure adaptation. I can shrug and say, okay. But when you remove the fangs from your villains for reasons that do not seemingly even make sense, nor are they justified. In the first movie, you feel as an audience member, you feel the stakes because the wizard is propped up as this menace, a bad guy. You're afraid of him. You don't know what he's capable of. You get the idea that he would do anything. Same thing with his partner in crime, Michelle Yeoh's character.
Madame Morble or whatever.
But in part two, Oz loses all of his menace. And it's almost like he doesn't really want to do any of this. But that's not at all how you set him up in the first movie. He was a bad guy who felt threatening. In the second movie, there is no threat. He kind of is just there. He's not really even firm on his beliefs anymore.
He goes from, I tricked you and I need your powers to help me stay in control.
To
at
whatever.
The end of the first one, to being like, why don't you join me? It'd be really cool.
He started a war and then he's like, it's like starting a war. I'm like, I don't really want to fight this war.
Exactly. It's just, he lost all drive in the second one. And this is both,
motivation.
This is both the movie and the second act where it's like, why would you do this? Why would you have it be that he's like, oh, well, now that you're here in my sanctum and everyone in the world is looking for you and you're my biggest threat and have actively said you want to get rid of me, why don't you join me? And now that sounds stupid, but that's like the Emperor's move. Hey, Luke, join the dark side. But the trick to that whole thing is that it's not an offer. It is a veiled threat. And that when you say no, there are consequences. And in this, there's none. Yeah, you're all right. Bye. Like, it doesn't follow the basic tenets of villains and plot progressions and cause and effect.
He went from malevolent entity, malevolent leader, to benevolent bumbling
buffoon.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Like, am I right, though?
I do agree with that statement. It just feels like so many things just happen. We need a Tin Man, so here's a scene that it justifies him.
Did he? That scene was so
but it makes no sense. But here's the thing. In the play, it's the same thing where, well, we need somehow to connect Elphaba to the Tin Man. First of all, why? Second of all, okay, I guess. But it doesn't really work for a cause and effect and reason she should do this and why the characters have the emotional response they do, other than we need to have her be the villain still, and we're still kind of moving towards the Wizard of Oz bullet points that we feel like we have to hit. But this also, trying not to spoil too much, makes massive, well, why the fuck did this happen, or why the hell wouldn't this happen?
It's incoherent with the later part of reasons.
Other characters. Yes.
Specifically the Cowardly Lion.
All the characters. All the characters from Wizard of Oz.
No, because you're talking, yes.
Is what I'm not trying to.
But the Cowardly Lion is one of the most,
what the hell,
like, incoherent justifications as to why he hates the Wicked Witch. It doesn't make any sense. And I won't, you know, I don't even think that's a spoiler. When they try to justify why he's cowardly or describe why he's cowardly, it's because Elphaba rescued him when he was a cub and had to fend for himself, so he never developed any courage. Does that make sense to anyone?
No. Because I would think
that doesn't follow logically. Logic 101, take a class, Director Chu. That just doesn't follow. You would fail.
If you want to free a character from captivity, which is a good thing, like an objectively or an objection. What's the word I'm blanking?
Yes,
right now.
No, you said it right.
Objectively good thing. You then paint it as a bad thing because you force it to be that he's the Cowardly Lion, rather than change it to where, instead of her freeing him from captivity, what if she indirectly took him away from his family and the cage was unbeknownst a temporary thing, not this torturous carnival shit? Because then taking him away from his family, he would have had to grow up alone in a dark forest by himself. That would make you a coward.
Let's make it more simple. Or Elphaba is green, she's scary, she's a witch, she freaked him out, and it just stunted him.
Like a traumatic childhood moment or something.
And he never developed courage because of that traumatic event. That would make more sense.
But even then, the green woman took me away from my parents makes him cowardly. Not the green woman made me not able to fight my own battle.
What? That actually forms character.
That's what I'm saying. And that's the problem, is that we just have these events that have to happen because of the Wizard of Oz framing that sacrifice the momentum from the first part of the movie and force things with no real beginning and no real stakes, because we're just tangentially touching on, oh, remember the Tin Man? Oh, here's the lonely or cowardly lion. Here's the Scarecrow. Move on. That we don't get any of the buildup and payoff that a normal movie or even just a normal story has. And that seems to be a foundational issue with the second act. And that's why I'm saying, why wouldn't you change some of this for the better to make a stripped down, tight as a fucking chestnut corset, first and only movie?
I think ultimately that is just the simplest way, really, to sum up our thoughts on this movie, is that it's all in the writing. It's all writing, because it's not even directing. Directing's fine in terms of working with the actors and putting together those tunes,
songs and all
the
that
songs.
Stuff. Yeah.
Ariana Grande, great job. Goldblum, great job. Michelle Yeoh, great job. Cynthia Erivo is fantastic.
She's great. She steals the show.
Yeah, she's my favorite part of the entire part one and part two. She is so good.
And the most consistent.
She is the most consistent. So it's just a shame that you go see this movie with all of the prettiness of the first minus an actual fucking story.
The best, this to me was the same situation as The Hobbit Part 3. The Hobbit movies, the first one is the first half of the book. The second one is everything but the last 20 pages of the book. And the third one is 20 pages stretched, as Bilbo says, like butter over too much bread. There is not enough of it, but it was stretched out to a 2.5 hour plus movie. This was a solid first installment with Wicked that has a cliffhanger-ish ending, but at least still sets up and finalizes kind of what we're here for. And the second one is this breakneck barreling through of recognizable memory or moments from The Wizard of Oz that tangentially kind of connect to the first part of Wicked, to the benefit of no one, for an additional 2.5 hours almost, when it only had maybe 30, 40 minutes. And again, had you strip mined and better whittled that first installment and then put this other half into one solid movie, you would have had a great fucking thing here. And instead you have a really good one and then a lackluster follow-up that maybe if you watch them back to back, you'll get a benefit, but then you're going to be sitting there saying, why am I watching a 5-hour movie with 2.5, 3 hours of plot?
You know, they could have just done, and then I'll quit rewriting this movie. They could have just done, you said something similar, I believe, a few moments ago, but I'll make it even more simpler. Make this movie 100 minutes. You could have made the first movie 105 minutes, made this one 105 minutes, and you would have had two stronger films back to back.
Yeah.
I think they blew the load in the first one and didn't give themselves enough story. If you're adapting this, who's to say that you need to have the part, your cinematic version of part one, have everything that's in the stage play part one?
Make your own decisions with that.
Yeah, you can. I'm not saying abandon large elements of part one, make them fit into part two.
And that's the problem. I think part of this is something from a let's adapt it directly. I think part of it is a studios want to hear we're making two movies with one budget kind of thing. I'm sure there was parts at play behind the scenes that forced the issue. But when I look at 160 minutes for the first one and 137 minutes for the second one.
Oh, there's the problem right there. I didn't realize the first one was that much longer.
160 to 137. So an additional 23 minutes in the first movie.
They could have gotten a little more creative with the adaptation and taken parts out of that first one and make it fit in the second one.
They could have easily made either one amazing movie or two better movies by moving things around a bit.
A three-hour epic.
Instead, you get one really solid unfinished and one half-baked kind of disappointment.
Yeah, because this is going to tarnish the IP.
A bunch of people will watch the first one and then just be like, yeah, I know the rest of the second.
Yeah. And also because the first one was nominated for numerous Oscars, this one will not be nominated.
Well, the same thing happened to Dune. The first one got a bunch of awards and a lot of nominations. And the second one was like, yeah, you already had your time in the sun. Yeah, and unfortunately, but this is not a strong enough installment compared to the first one.
Yeah. The only thing is that Dune Part 2 was in a lot of ways better than the first
one. Well, that's a different episode of our discussion.
Well, my point is that I didn't like that comparison, Thomas, because...
I'm just saying from an Oscar
and
how they will relate it. The Oscars look at it like you had...
thinking we're, view Dune Part 2 the same way we view Wicked Part 2.
What I'm saying is the Academy will give you 1 year.
For those mainstream pictures.
Lord of the Rings didn't win nearly as much until the third installment, and then it won everything. Dune 1 got a lot of nominations and won several things. Dune 2 barely got mentioned. Wicked got a lot of notoriety at the Academy Awards. I don't see that happening for Part 2, which is a shame because had it been one solid movie entirely, I think it would have easily won a lot more than it did.
That's not to say this movie isn't going to blow up the box office.
This movie will do well.
Unless the critic reviews really hurt the box office performance, because apparently...
it's a bit mixed.
We're not the only ones that have a lot of issues. If you read through the reviews, there are a lot of critics, mainstream critics, who are saying similar things, and they're saying them far... less nice than we are. So we're not alone in our thoughts with these issues for this second part here, but I don't think that's going to affect the box office. This will probably the biggest movie of the year. It has a bit of a built-in audience at this point. It's one of those event films. It really connected with a specific demo, which is what a movie must do like this if it's going to be successful. It has to have their niche. It has to connect with the niche as well as the mainstream. And it's going to do both.
Yeah, I think this will absolutely be a financial success. The first one brought in $759 million, and that's, I think, Jurassic World Afterbirth was the best financial one so far this year, and it was like just over 800. I could see this beating that. The fans of the first one will go see this, and the thing is, it's disappointing, because
and casual moviegoers as well, people just want to go see a movie.
It's disappointing because the production design is great, the acting is great. Even the visual effects, there's some of it's a little bit too VFX heavy, but some of the stuff looks really good. There's some unique camera movement and directing from a cinematography element to this that is really interesting. But it's weakened by, as we always say, the script isn't there. And while the first movie has the character arcs of Elphaba's trying to find her clique, her niche, where she belongs, she becomes empowered, becomes the witch by the end of the movie, it has this whole change. This one is very one note. It is very flat. She's the witch and she's going about witchy stuff, and then the end of the movie happens.
One last thing, Thomas, because I want to get your thoughts on this. Even the counter narrative components, the things that we talked about, from the first one, the ideological framing and the political thematics, they're absent.
They fall. They're gone.
The thing that made a fun, cutesy movie actually meaningful, the themes, the political themes,
just
the
absent. Cultural themes,
they're not even there. There's one comment by Oz where he says something about history being a lie. That's the only thing that connects any of the political subtext.
Well, it's just a lot of it's just been abandoned. And there's a lot of little things about what is the truth? Is it in the eye? Is it in the hands of the storyteller or the survivors who can tell the truth? Quote, there's a little bit of that, but it the first one really hits on some of that and really goes into that element. This one is like, oh yeah, it's also there. And again, I think part of that is because it sticks to elements of the original Wizard of Oz movie. And I know it's originally a book, but bear with me, you know what I mean? It sticks to having to have those plot points that causes it to have to hinder its own storytelling capabilities. Because again, the first one's far enough removed to give you this interesting alternative story, other side of the coin. And the second one has to bring it all back and kind of break things back into place with what you know because of the Wizard of Oz movie, which is a shame because I think a more clever effort could have fixed what didn't work from the musical, according to its own fans, rather than just stick with what you know. It's why would you stick with what you know doesn't work?
I wonder if there was like a studio imperative, like when they optioned this, it was like, listen, you can option Wicked, but it must be a true adaptation for the most part.
And that could be part of it.
A near one-to-one of the stage play. Again, these are things that we'll probably won't know until like an academic goes in there and starts doing scholarly work and he digs through the archives of emails and messages from studios. Then perhaps we'll know.
Yeah.
But it's impossible for us to pin down that answer.
It's just a shame because I really was thinking this would be another solid installment. And then, yeah, maybe the two of them are too long, but you get one solid movie out of it.
Yeah, especially since you and I have not been on a great track record of reviewing movies together of late. We really haven't.
We haven't.
David and I have been lucky.
I know.
You and I, we have not been lucky this year.
Are we the harbingers of a bad time at the movie theater?
Like, I almost am like, I don't want to invite you to this movie.
I know.
It's going to be bad.
It sucks. It's just a shame because so much of what went into this and went into the first one is still there that works. And it's just been hindered by not changing what you know didn't work. And I cannot understand why you would do that. Other than mandates or laziness. That seems to be the two.
The movie, it defies logic.
It was defying gravity, Mike. Thank you very much. Yeah. But overall, will people go see this? Absolutely. But it's not something that you can enjoy, I think, without having watched the first one. Like, you can watch Empire Strikes Back, Two Towers, and you'll definitely enjoy them more if you saw the first one. But you can enjoy
that. Also, who does that?
Who the hell does that? Savages? Sociopaths?
Yeah, come on.
But who's gonna sit down for Wicked Part 2 and not watch Part 1? Sociopaths.
See, I did date a woman once who was like that. Like, I don't need to see the first one. We'll just go see the second one.
Well, you're not with them anymore, are you?
Well, guess what? Don't worry about seeing the second one because we're through.
Have you checked on them? They might be in prison now.
I am a movie snob. But you gotta hit my movie checklist if we're going to date. If you show up late to a movie, you don't enjoy previews.
Straight to jail.
You don't bother watching the first movie before going in to see a sequel. I'm sorry. We just don't have much in common. Forget about all the other things in life that matter. Yeah. Just the movies.
Just
stuff.
The movies. Now, and that's the thing is, whatever we say, people who want to see it will go see it. And it's not even that you shouldn't see it. It's just that it is disappointing and not very good given what came beforehand.
Yeah, no, I just the way you said it, like, it's not that you shouldn't see it. It's just disappointing and not good.
Like, but that's the thing is, like, you're going to see this anyway.
Uh-huh.
People have made their mind up.
Correct.
Yeah. What we say isn't going to change that. But you will be disappointed going into it. And maybe if you prepare yourself for that.
I think if you're an observant moviegoer or you're a movie aficionado, like, this is your hobby, this is what you love.
Yeah.
I think those individuals will have problems with the movie.
Yes.
If you enjoyed the first film and you're a diehard Wicked fan,
you'll be fine.
You're going to like this movie. Yeah. If you're a casual moviegoer that doesn't necessarily pick up on things like bad writing and you just like the escapist moment, then you will probably enjoy this as well.
I still think you'll be confused. I think you'll kind of be like, who's this? Why is this happening? Where are we now? Oh, it's over.
Yeah, there was one of those sitting next to me.
There was a lot of that element to this, too.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But what's your score for this?
I've been thinking about that since I saw it, dude. It has been tough for me because by our Rain Man Digital scoring system, it's a movie category takes up most of that percentage. Between 30% and 70%, we're kind of like, yeah, it's a movie. It's fine to some degree. But when people hear those numbers, because they're used to IGN and Rotten Tomatoes, they're going to lose their shit kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you just explained it. So
But for me, I'd have to say this is less than what I wanted, less than expected, especially given what had come before.
Now, before that, again, we didn't officially review movie. However, when we were talking about Wicked during our Oscar coverage, we did allude to grades, and I believe there were high 80s.
Yeah.
Right? Is that? Right.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe, if I remember correctly, we actually had said that. We didn't give it a specific number, but we said high 80s.
Mm-hmm. And what I would say with this one now, and where I kind of feel with it, I'd say it's kind of in the mid 40s for me.
Wow.
It is. If 50% is something like what we gave Nuremberg less than that because it wasn't quite making it on its own as a movie. This has no beginning, no stakes, and the plot is all over the place.
It doesn't.
Dude. It has no beginning, no stakes between scenes. The plot sequence is all over the map. There is no setup and payoff. There is just payoff because you know the setup because you watched either Wicked or you saw The Wizard of Oz, or ideally both. There is nonsensical moments between characters' decisions and actions that don't even feel like they're the same people from the first installment. And other than the visuals, the acting, and the fact that it had such a strong predecessor, none of this really works on its own. And I can't give it more than 50% for that, but I wouldn't put this into the red below 30% either. So I'd give it like a 45 for me. It's because it's not something I'll watch again because I don't have a reason to. I might, honest to God, I might watch the first one again because of some of the songs or elements of it that really worked. And I enjoyed my time with the characters.
You know what my suggested viewing of this?
Hmm.
Watch Wicked Part 1 and then just watch Wizard of Oz.
That'd be interesting. That would be interesting to see that.
I mean, you'll miss some character moments, but listen.
Or someone has to go in and edit, like, Topher Grace's Star Wars? Go in and edit and splice Wizard of Oz scenes in between Wicked 1 and 2 scenes.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I'm happy with just Part 1. I don't think I ever need to see Part 2. Part 2 doesn't do anything. The way Part 1 ends, it sets up for Wizard of Oz.
That is true. It really does. That's a good point.
So my grade, it's a 60.
All right.
It's a 60 for me. I don't know if I can justify doing a 40.
But for me, 50 is average.
Hold on. The script was so bad in this.
If 50's average.
The script was really bad.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Everything else was good. The script was just bad.
If this was not, and this is what people would be like, well, you can't do it like that. But here's the thing. If this was a standalone movie, what would you give it?
A 53, 52.
If that, better than Nuremberg?
I'm only giving it a 50. Now, okay, if this was a one movie and that's it?
Yeah.
If this was just it. Oh, yeah. Then this is not even a movie.
That's what I'm saying.
But I'm also judging it possibly knowing that it is a continuation. So it does have
So here's what I would say then. If you look at just this movie on its own, go with my review score. If you're looking at this as the second half of a single experience, Mike's score makes more sense.
Yeah.
And that's where you get in between.
Yep.
I think that's fair.
I think it's more than fair. We're tempering ourselves.
We really are.
I'll be honest, because I left that theater kind of angry.
You did. But here's the thing. The fans are coming out giving this thing a 97% so far on Rotten Tomatoes. So we got to temper that.
Well, what's the critics giving it?
70.
Yeah.
That's going to go down.
That's more reasonable for now. But once the movie hits
the mainstream,
it's going to drop a little bit more. It'll probably end around 65. Mainstream critics.
It comes out the 21st. So then that's going to go down. I wouldn't be surprised to see it hit low 60s, early high 50s.
Yeah. But that audience score isn't going to go anywhere.
They haven't seen the movie.
Oh, that's true, huh?
They haven't seen the movie, and yet the fans have given it 97%. Anyway, for those of you who are going to go see it, you're going to see it either way. But what I would say is, listen to what we're saying. Don't just go see the movie and you love it and that's all there is, and be mad that people have given it less than stellar reviews. I would say try to legitimately listen to what the criticism points are from people who, like ourselves, may not like it as much.
Yeah.
Because it's not saying you can't have fun with something. And I hate when people say don't yuck someone else's yum. You can still ask that it be better. There's nothing wrong with wanting the best of the things you love. Don't just settle for good enough.
Yeah.
So with that, that's going to do it here for us at Critique Revolve. Enjoy your time at the movie theaters. Anyone's listening to this review, we know you're going to go. So have a good time. Let us know what you think. Give us feedback. Tell us we're wrong. Let us know if you agree.
We could send you Thomas's address and you can send hate mail to him.
I have a P.O. box for that.
Maybe a pipe bomb.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that still a thing?
No, that's now you're getting into legalities and the whole thing.
I'm just joking.
But that's going to do it here for us at Critique Revolve. Thank you all for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Hello, very nice to meet you. I'd like to know about sex change operations.
I see.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.